It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark. Steven is at the shop today.
He is out.
We said Thursday, he said no. We said Friday, he said no. We said Saturday, he said no. We said Sunday, he said no. And then he said, I hate my life.
Yep.
So he will be back on the next show. But actually, this is it's probably good that he's here because he's not a huge horror fan. And we covered zombies 2 weeks ago. We covered Universal Monsters last week. And today we're going straight into gore. So with me today is David Redfield.
Hey, guys. How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?
And he got Steven's chair again.
It's nice here. I'm going to try and trick Steven into working at the store more often.
And Neil Fisher is back.
Hey, everybody. Thanks to be back. Or glad to be back. Excuse me. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, all of it. All of it was positive.
Yes. All good stuff.
So when we were talking about this, you guys said that you really wanted to do the slasher movies of the 80s.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And which is good because this is the genre of horror I probably seen the least, even though I was growing up when it was big. The only thing I could really get into was Nightmare on Elm Street, and that was because it was more of a supernatural kind of film series, and it had like a really typical monster. But things like Friday the 13th, I couldn't get into. Hellraiser, I didn't watch till much, much later. So, and things like Maniac or Maniac Cop or Silent Night, Deadly Night, I have never seen.
No, you've seen those, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm a huge movie buff, and I saw a lot of slasher movies and horror movies when I was a kid. I think when I was probably 4 or 5, I saw Nightmare on Elm Street, fell in love, and I used to watch, unrelated, but I used to watch Howard the Duck on loop on VHS.
Which is scary.
I mean, you get duck boobs in there. What else can you ask for?
You know what? I was going to ask.
You get Leah Thompson and Leah Thompson boobs.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
yeah.
It's not fair.
No, yeah, right.
How is the gore horror movies in the 80s, is that the only time when we actually got to see like female nudity in horror movies?
Not necessarily. I mean,
because they were always like notorious. It was always like, oh, here's this girl drunk and crazy in the woods, and there goes her top.
Well, I mean, are you talking about nudity as like full on, topless, like a nipple, or just the women?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but say it slow. Yeah.
I just remember, like, when I would watch, like, Jason or Hellraiser, whenever I watched those movies, I was always like, when are the boobs coming, guys? And they're just like, hold on a second, it's coming, it's coming. It's like, yeah. And that's why, like, in Cabin in the Woods, it's, like, one of my favorite movies, but I love that they play.
I just watched it again this week.
Oh, I watched that probably, like, 5 times already this month, but that's my favorite thing is they're always like, oh, here it comes, guys. And they're like releasing the pheromones in the forest because it's so traditional in every movie.
I love how all the scientists just get real quiet.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely an American trait to have the type of nudity that we have. But I mean, it's always been around, especially through the Italian horror films and the Giallo films, Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci and all those guys. So nudity was there, but I think Americans took it to a whole new level, which we do with a lot of things, and just made it bigger and double D. So
yeah.
Well, I was thinking about the slasher movies today when we were getting ready for this, and it seems to me that it took over for like blaxploitation and kung fu movies of the 70s, which were also like had boobs for no reason at all.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sex and violence, but we went from Shaft shooting guys to Jason hacking up people. And those were like, those were the drive-in movies, my youth. But then as the drive-in kind of started to disappear, that's when VHS rentals got big.
Right.
And the horror section in like pre-Blockbuster videos, when it was just your local video store, was always just huge. It's like horror and porn were about, and they were in the same two corners of the store.
What does that tell you about the 80s?
Well, I mean,
Reaganism for you.
And you can even, you know, look at Sean Cunningham, who directed the first Friday the 13th. I mean, he came from a background of softcore porn and also working on Last House on the Left with Wes Craven. It definitely has its influences there, especially with that film, because obviously that was one of the first ones to include teens having sex and being killed for it. So,
well, Neil, where do you think it starts? Because I've always imagined it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And when we were talking about Universal Monsters, I pointed to that film as when the classic era of horror really stops. You know, it's post Godzilla, but it's also post Hammer, Peter Cushing, and Vincent Price. Would you consider that the beginning of it, or would you go as far back as, say, Night of the Living Dead? Or
you know, you can go pretty far back. There was a film in the 30s called 13 Women, and some people will say that this is the first slasher movie, but it definitely has the elements. It was about sorority sisters who had snubbed a woman coming into their sorority because she was mixed race, and then they get knocked off one by one. So that was sort of the first, I guess, entrance of people getting knocked off one by one, and it was kind of funny, too, because one of the actors, Peg Entwistle, before the release, she jumped off the Hollywood sign and killed herself before the movie even came out. And the movie deals with a lot of suicide, so it's just kind of creepy. But so that's, you know, some people will say that's the first, and a lot
in
of people.
The 30s?
Yeah, in the 30s, yeah.
People kill themselves all the time.
I know, but
it's,
just
not like, suicide. It's not like in the 60s they were like, hey, I could kill myself.
David Navarro's suicide starts.
Socrates killed himself.
1930.
I thought he just...
he drank hemlock.
Oh, okay. No, but I mean, like, the slasher movies, like, even, like, just a horror movie like that in the 30s, was that, it must have been, like, a silent film. Just, like, how do you even, like, it's just quietness and just everyone has to read all these texts and...
Well, if you want to go, like, really far back, which I don't want to bore anyone, but, I mean, you could go back to the silent films of Germany, which is where most of our, a lot of our horror comes from. I mean,
a lot of the expressionism.
Yeah.
Like Caligari.
You know, Caligari. Sunset, and I mean, like a lot of those or Sunrise, excuse me, a lot of those different ones. So, you know, some people will say it's 13 Women, which is, you know, it's scholarly, I guess you could say it is, but a lot of people will say it starts with Peeping Tom and Psycho in like 1960. So,
Psycho is much earlier even than Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
But with Psycho, it always seemed to me, and I could be wrong in this, it always seemed to me that Hitchcock was showing what you could do with that genre. It always felt like that genre existed when he got there. He didn't create...
Right.
The slasher thriller.
Right, and there's only two deaths, two dead bodies in that anyway. It's not really like a traditional slasher where he's just knocking people off left and right.
Right, one of them is Martin Balsam.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, how sad could you get?
but yeah, and then, you know, to answer your question, I mean, with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, some people argue that Black Christmas is the first... the first traditional slasher, and then Halloween kind of... took that and turned it on its head a little bit, and Halloween is what many people consider the true beginning of the slasher
movies. Halloween's like 78.
So, but I think right around that era, though, the Texas Chainsaw and Halloween, and the difference, though, with Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, you know, they pulled from what Psycho did, which was Ed Gein, which a lot of movies and characters are pulled from Ed Gein and how crazy he was, so... and that was a little bit more based off of reality, but then Halloween also, I mean... You know, it was a small town where just a creepy guy in a mask escaped an insane asylum could kill you. So a lot of it based in realism, more often than not.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing of the slasher film. Other than Jason not dying, which is usually just the excuse to get him back for the sequel.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of supernatural. And as I said, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street is kind of the exception that breaks the rule because everybody considers Freddy to be part of the slasher genre.
Right.
And people don't even consider Hellraiser, even though it's of that time, because it's just, you know, it's weird S&M fascistic.
I guess everyone always sidesteps S&M, except the people who secretly love it.
That and Puzzle Makers.
Yeah. That and the fact that Lemmy sang, like, the theme song to Hellraiser 3.
Yeah.
That's the best ever. Hellraiser! It had the greatest video. Do you remember the video for it?
No.
There's a video where Lemmy is playing checkers with Pinhead.
Oh, my God.
It's like a Seventh Sign.
Oh, God, that's great, yeah.
But the best thing, my friend Howie, who talked about it on the show, used to love this when we were in college, is that Lemmy loses, and Lemmy flips over the board and gets really mad, and Pinhead, like, cowers in fear of Lemmy. We were like, that's right, if Lemmy gets mad, you back down!
Man, how many sequels did the whole entire slasher, like, in the 80s, like, how many did Jason have?
I think Jason had upwards of 8, maybe 7.
I feel
eight.
Like he, there was a 10.
I think
like
there
oh,
was
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Jason X.
Jason X, and they had the reboot Friday the 13th.
And there was Freddy vs. Jason.
Freddy yeah. vs. Jason.
Right. And I think they rebooted both franchises after Freddy vs. Jason. I think yeah. that did well, but it was kind of like, this is as far as we can take both of these.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely preferred the reboot of Friday the 13th over the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot, just because I don't know. I don't think they did a
the
great
Nightmare
job.
The Nightmare on Elm Street reboot reminded me how good that first movie is.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I always liked it, and when I saw the remake, I was like, no, that first one's a classic.
Oh, of course. And you can, you know, Wes Craven will go on record as saying that he didn't want to do a sequel, and one of the producers came up to him and said, I'm going to find a way to figure this movie out like the American Cheeseburger and just keep making it over and over yeah. again. And
well, he's not involved with the second one.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Which is a weird homoerotic piece of fiction.
Yeah, but I thought, didn't he come out with, like, didn't Wes Craven come back and do, like, the real version of Nightmare on Elm Street?
The new Nightmare. Movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not Freddy's Dead. Freddy's Dead was the
It was the Nightmare on Elm Street, new Nightmare, yeah.
New
Nightmare.
I love that one, that was which is like one. Heather Langenkamp playing herself, mm-hmm. and they're like, they're making a new Freddy, and Freddy's coming through the props.
It's, and then you yeah. find out that That's, what, it's like, they, what I liked about the slasher movies is they started like, obviously because they were trying to explain the sequels, they started giving mythos to them all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think what, Mike Myers, there was like something with witchcraft at one point where they were just like, you know, like, even though he died in the last one, he could come back on a crescent moon on this month, and then like, I'm the born werewolf. Yeah, and I'm born to kill him, I have to kill him, I'm the only person that could do it. And that's what I felt like in the new Nightmare. They were just like, no, it's all real, like Wes Craven had these nightmares and that's where he got them all. It's like, we're like, this is a witchcraft story.
Well, the great thing about New Nightmare, when you go back and watch it, you realize it's the prototype for Scream.
It is. It's his entrance to Scream.
It's Wes Craven disassembling the horror movie, mm-hmm. making a horror movie about horror movies, and then Scream is the next thing. And I think Scream might be what effectively ends the horror genre. That's kind of it's kind of the epilogue. It's just like, this is what this whole period was about.
Because they just like broke the fourth wall, telling you all the little steps and
right. You were an insider into mm-hmm. into the genre, and I think especially what New Nightmare did is, you know, it was sort of Wes Craven, I think, probably sending a letter to the executives that he makes fun of them in the movie, that said, hey, you remade my movie with 5 sequels, and you took a character as dark as Freddy, and you made him, you know, a one-liner, and
yeah, he was a clown.
He was a clown, exactly, yeah.
You remember the TV show, Freddy's Nightmares?
Yeah.
Where he was, like, kind of Rod Serling? No, he was really more of the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
Where he was just like, I'm in a diner, he's a guy who kills his wife.
Yep, and you can tell, I mean, when they make pajamas out of Freddy and make little dolls the kids can have, it doesn't really make him as scary as he was.
Yeah, I was in high school during the whole Freddy craze, and we all had dolls, and I remember one of the kids in freshman year and I, we bought the glove.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like, I wanted that glove so bad, and we had a glove fight, and within 10 seconds, my glove went right in his eye. I didn't mean to. We were just kind of slashing around.
I really wanted to be Freddy for Halloween when I was a kid, and my mom got me the glove, but would not get me the mask. And I think one of my uncles got me the mask, and I put it on. And when you look yourself in the mirror in the bathroom, you're just like, you get freaked out by how creepy you look. Mm-hmm. And I think I just saw the new Nightmare one. So for the longest time, I had a hard time. Like, with that glove, because I would hide it. I would be like, oh, no, I'm going to hide it. Put it in a shoebox and hide it in my closet. Because, like, I started getting nightmares that, like,
freaked
the glove...
Freaked yourself out?
Yeah, because, like, I mean, it's creepy, you know? Like, you know who you are, then you look at yourself in the mask, and you got the glove on, and it's just like... It's like, oh, it's coming back. It's all true.
Yeah, when I started watching them, I was talking about this last week. I was always kind of scared of horror movies, so I didn't watch them till later in life. So, in high school... I think the 3 of them had been out, and I got pneumonia, and I missed a month of school. So I'm just home, like, the whole month of December, watching real Ghostbusters. And my dad's like, well, I'll rent you movies so you can watch movies during the day. And I was like, I want to watch Nightmare on Elm Street. And what I didn't realize was I did a marathon of 1, 2, and 3 while I am really high on pneumonia medication. So Freddy showed up in every dream, and when I had that much medication, I was sleeping 19 hours a day. So Freddy showed up 9 times a day. It was such a bad decision.
I think if that was one of the movies, I feel like he would pity you, thinking, man, this guy's asleep all day. I'm just not going to mess with him. It's just too easy.
Yeah. He's like, he can't wake up. He wakes up and goes right back down.
You know, I saw So for Jason, it's Friday the 13th, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I saw the second one before I saw the first one. So the fact that, like, in the first one, it's the mom that's killing all the campers was, like, really new to me. And I really, like, because I actually saw more Halloween than I saw any of the other ones. Like, I caught every Halloween, and then later on, like, I think the Freddy movies were on TV, so that's when I would catch them. But the Friday the 13th, when I was just like, oh, but wait, the mom's the killer in the first one? I thought that was great.
Yeah, I only saw the first three Halloweens. And I think by the time, there was a long break between three and four, because mm-hmm. three is the crazy one with the masks that has nothing to do with Michael Myers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think by the time the fourth one came around, I was like, I'm done with
Michael Myers. So you didn't see
Danielle Harris?
Yeah, Danielle. But you didn't see Halloween 20 or whatever?
No. H2O.
Yeah. H2O. Oh,
yeah, H2O, where Jamie Lee Curtis comes back.
Yeah, and what was the one where, like, they did a house and they had, like, some sort of robot Mike Myers or something? Something what? With Busta Rhymes?
Yeah,
was in
that
one?
Was...
what was that?
It starts with an R. I can't believe I'm forgetting it. It's
Halloween Resurrection. Halloween Resurrection. I think that's what. Oh, my God. They really destroyed.
Tyra Banks was in that.
Yeah, they destroyed their own.
Well, Jason went into outer space.
That's the worst one, but that's also the greatest one. Because what's awesome is that they show you the last movie where Jason's dead, and I think they go to Earth, and they're like, oh, look at him. He's frozen, and they take him up into space. And even though, like, they break him out and he's still frozen, his arm falls off and kills someone. And it's just like Jason, even in death, still murders teenagers. But, like, it's in the future, so they're able to bring that kid back to life. And I just love the premise that the nanobots, like nanomachines went into him and, like, but turn him into, like, Jason Generation X, like, super, like...
Why? Why would nanobots want to bring back a serial killer?
Next generation, man. It's, like, for all those kids.
Next generation was peaceful. Picard would not let that happen.
It's a Borg.
I used to watch Jason Goes to Hell all the time on VHS, and I just remember that that lizard eel-type creature that would go in people's mouths and turn them into Jason.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I did not get that far.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that in 3D? Because I remember, like, snakes coming out of the hockey mask.
Oh, yeah. I think it might have been. But
Freddy's Dead, the end was 3D as well.
Yes, yeah. And that one I remember, too, because they go to sleep, you put your glasses on.
Yeah. Wasn't in Jason Goes to Hell, that's like when you first saw, like, franchising bridging over for those series.
Right.
Because that's when, like, Freddy's hand would come up, bring the mask down and be like, welcome to hell or something.
Yeah, that was like their attempt.
Oh, that was their first tease. It's like the...
like an Aliens... No, Predator 2 when you see the alien skull. I thought that was great.
Well, that was an interesting thing because you guys... as I was thinking of the 80s, I started to think of Aliens and Predator. I think that's the slasher movie having an effect on the science fiction movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean, Alien was obviously a... it was a haunted house in space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was a mix of horror and sci-fi. But then, you know, Predator is... All these movies got gorier and gorier and more violent. Like, and at the time, too, you had Rambo, you had Schwarzenegger making these movies, RoboCop. Mm-hmm. RoboCop's incredibly violent.
Yep.
And they don't have any need to be. It's just that there was this, like, bloodthirst in the 80s.
Yeah.
Which I think was fueling that whole genre.
Yeah, and the blood kept getting bigger and crazier. I know on Friday the 13th, they had Tom Savini, a young Tom Savini, and some of those kills are pretty graphic, and they still kind of hold up, especially like one of them, I think, was a knife or an ice pick through the neck on a bed. And that's one of the things with slasher movies. I mean, you know, when you rent it, you want to see people die. As in Dave's case, you want to see boobs.
You want to see boobs.
And you want to see
Boobs die.
Yeah, you want to see boobs die. Exactly. It's a twofer there.
But, like, they always had to top themselves on kills. I know that's something, like, even when we write horror movies, Neil, we're always like, we can't kill him this way. We got to kill him another way because we wrote it that another person died in another movie. And it's just like, that's why, like, some of those deaths in those movies are just insane. Like, what do you think is the most insane death in, like, the slasher films of the 80s?
I don't know. That's a tough one. One of my favorites that I can recall right now, which isn't one of the craziest ones, is, and I can't remember which Freddy it is, but there's a girl bench pressing, and he goes up to her.
Four,
yeah. And he puts so much weight on her that her elbows break, and then she turns into like a cockroach in the Roach Motel. Yeah. And that one I just remember being really funny.
That one, I remember three is the one that always, like, the kid who is into puppets.
Oh, yeah.
And Freddy strips his veins out and
that's
makes him walk.
One.
Like up to the roof, and then he just cuts the strings. I remember that freak me out so, because it looked so painful every step of it. It wasn't just like an explosion of blood and gone.
Was that Dream Reapers? Or was that
Dream Warriors?
Dream Warriors. That was Frank Darabont.
That's where Wes Craven comes back. Yeah. That's Heather Langenkamp.
Is that the one where a kid thinks he could beat Freddy because he gives himself superpowers?
Oh, yeah. And Freddy just stabs him.
Yeah. See, that was the one thing. Is like when I was like watching those movies, it was like, well, if it's a dream, I'm just going to dream that I have powers like Superman. It's like, oh, there's a kid that does that. And then Freddy kills him. I'm like, shit.
shit. I always, whenever I have dreams like that, the only way to combat them is to go, oh, I'm dreaming. And then everybody just stops. And then
like Inception? Like they all notice it?
No, but it's the opposite. They all just freeze, and then I just start messing with them. And I'm like, then they're all mannequins, and I'm just like pushing them around. And I try to have girls have sex with me, and that never works.
Oh, you always wake up?
I just wake up, yep. You always wake up. I think because you roll over.
It's like that scene in Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey sees Lauren Holly and she like taking off her top and it's headlights.
Yeah. And then they're about to hit a car.
I always get that vision of Dan Aykroyd when he's dreaming about the blowjob from a ghost in Ghostbusters. And he just rolls off the bed with his like leg up in the air.
Like, I think I was watching Jason, which is Jason 3? Is that the one where he's on a cruise ship and then they land in Detroit or something like that?
No, that's Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh my God. That's one of my favorite.
Which he's in Manhattan for like 10 minutes and it's all the back alleys from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But what I love about that one is he's like stopping muggers and the muggers are shooting him and he kills them. So he's like taking care of crime while he's dead
too. That's the reveal of Catwoman in Batman Returns. Yeah. It's like in the same alley. Stopping muggers.
My favorite death from that, which is, I always remember this one, I'll always remember it, is one of the characters is a boxer, like an amateur boxer, and he takes on Jason fist to hockey mask, and he's like jabbing him and punching him, and nothing's working, and then Jason takes like a big wind up and then punches his head off.
Yeah.
I like a good punching the head off. Well, but it's interesting when you talk about the deaths, they really are the gags.
Yeah.
In those movies, it's like writing a comedy and going, we got to top this joke. What's the best joke we can do? And they are jokes, really, but it's just like, how can we do the grossest thing we can do?
And that's why I think, like, even though, like, you know, they're supposed to be bloody and full of horror, like, that's I would say they're probably like fun movies because it was just like those horror types. It's like, that's okay. Violence per se, like, you know, it's a gag, like someone's
so unrealistic.
It's so unrealistic, yeah, compared to like what could really happen if you wanted to do like when they remade what's Jennifer Lawrence is in The Last House on the Left, right?
No, well, she's on A House at the End of the Street.
Oh, House
at the Last end. House on the Left was Sarah Paxton and I'm forgetting a few of the other cast
is that
members,
the girl from
Shark Knight and
No, Sarah Paxton's from Shark Knight, but was the other girl...
What's Shark Knight?
Oh.
Shark Knight was a David Ellis film. It was kind of like Jaws. It was a 3D movie about kids who went to a cabin and a shark was eating them all.
They were in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And saltwater fish were invading freshwater.
That's such a tough thing for us, too, because that director, David Ellis, was going to make our script that we wrote, our first one together, and then he just passed away like a year ago.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he was really nice, though. He was a really cool guy, and he was a stuntman and action director. So, but yeah, what were you going to say, Dave, about?
But anyway, like Last House on the Left, I just know that anytime they make like... When you have something that's more realistic, like regular people, like capturing someone and then killing them, it's so barbaric. And it just, to me, I just feel uneasy when you're in the theater and you're just like, oh, this is like a normal guy.
Well, yeah, and that's why.
Just doing it. But like when you have like something supernatural that could only rise when the crescent moon is present on the 13th of Friday, like that's like, that to me is like more fun because it's just like, in the end of the day, there's no real Mike Myers or Jason. Only
there's
Freddy
a real
Krueger.
Mike Myers.
Oh yeah.
He made the Love Guru, and it was terrifying.
The great comedian, the Canadian. But
I still can't believe they never did a sketch where they just put a hockey mask on Mike Myers and sent him out.
I wonder if that was something that they kept pushing. He's like, no, come on, guys, come on, stop it.
I can't help what I was named.
Yeah, but it's just like that's the one thing that's great about those horror movies, and that's what I love about. It's just like it was such a. They're just fun. Horror movies versus like realistic violent movies that could be in TV.
Yeah, that's why I've never watched any of the Saws. I've never watched Hostel. I've never watched these things, the torture porn. Yeah. I just don't see any entertainment value in that. I just feel like it's like It's about, or Human Centipede. I'm just like, that just seems that just seems disgusting and horrible.
To like, yeah, what can we do to gross people out?
Yeah, are those productions of like the 2000s? Like Hostel and
Saw? Yeah, I mean, are you talking about torture porn? Yeah, more realistic. I mean, when you think about it, you know, when Halloween came out and when things like Last House on the Left came out, they're very gritty, very realistic because, you know, to us, we came in later to a lot of those horror movies. But when Halloween came out, it was a big deal because it was a person invading, you know, houses of babysitters and people who were just doing a normal job. And same thing with Freddy. I mean, Freddy was pretty revolutionary because, you know, you talk about movies like Alien, it's a haunted house in space. You talk about Halloween, it's an intruder coming into your house. Nightmare on Elm Street is basically the same thing. It's just our space is our dreams. So that's when we go to sleep, which everyone does. Same thing with Jaws. Well,
also, Freddy, they have the backstory of child molestation.
Which makes
it really dark.
Very dark. That's why the first one is so good. It's so dark. And then they just... they're more tame as they go on, but
start to root for Freddy,
yeah,
because as we said, he becomes a clown, and I think they went out of their way in the sequels to make the kids, the teenagers, as unlikable as possible.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're just rooting for them to get killed off. It's like it's like a gangster movie, like a revenge story. It's like The Crow in that way. Mm-hmm. Although I'm not crazy about The Crow, but they make those gangsters horrible,
right?
Or like RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they make RoboCop's probably more fun because those are actors that worked RoboCop's in other things.
Movie.
And it's RoboCop is one of those movies where I did not realize how good it was. And then I saw like the Blu-ray for $10 and I was like, oh yeah, RoboCop. Yeah, I'll put it next to Aliens and Predator.
You didn't buy it for $1?
Total Recall. Yeah,
I'll buy that for $1.
I'll buy that for $9. And then I'm like, I didn't realize it until watching it recently that it's satire, which is also why I have no interest in the RoboCop remake, because they've already said, oh, we're going to do it as a straight movie. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
You've already made Iron Man. You don't need to make guy in robot suit. Like, the thing that made RoboCop genius was that it was about that we would get to this dystopian place where corporations could own police officers and just dissect them. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of at that point now.
That's what I liked about... was it Starship Troopers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I liked. It was the same director.
Yeah, Verhoeven.
Yeah.
He also did Basic Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So he's known for these, like, really over the top. No matter what genre it is, it's over the top.
Showgirls, too.
There was a shot in RoboCop where RoboCop comes to a club and he's, like, beating up on one of the guys. I think it's Ray Wise. And there's this weird shot of this, like, bald guy with glasses and he's in the camera just going, ah! That's Paul Verhoeven. Like they said on the documentary, he was giving direction of how to dance. He's telling dancers how to dance. He's like, like this, you do it like this. And they did a shot of it. And then he saw it in the editing room. He's like, put that in. And it comes out of nowhere. It's one of those things that you don't notice because it's so quick.
Uh-huh.
Like you're just like, oh, we're moving around the room. But if you are looking for it, it's a Cesar Romero mustache.
Oh, great.
It's great. Let me ask you a question. Like, even though like you see these horror movies in the 80s, like they all start great. They all start have like a solid... beginning. And
you
then
mean the first act or the first movie?
Just the first movie.
Okay.
You know, and then like sequel by sequel, they turn into a joke. What was the big deal with remaking them later on? Because like Rob Zombie, when he made Halloween, decided to make it into a 3-hour movie. But like
Peter Halloween, Jackson made King Kong into a 3-hour movie too.
Yeah, but like you get Halloween, you got the new Nightmare, or like the remake of Nightmare.
Right, that was that was Michael Bay producing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like, why did they? What do you think they were trying to do by remaking them?
I think they were trying to get easy money.
Yeah, it's all nostalgia.
Yeah, and those are all coming out in like the bad economy, mm-hmm. And the same way we were saying last week, how in the 90s they remade all the Universal Monster movies. They still have the rights. And they're not evergreen characters in the way that someone like Batman is, who is like constantly being published and constantly having television shows. They're of their era. And it's like, well, how do we refresh this? How do we sell it again? Oh, let's get Rorschach to be Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you see any use a lot of subwoofer? Sense?
I saw the Nightmare on Elm Street remake and the scare, and it was really annoying to me because as we were saying last week with Lisa, it was all there's two types of scares. There's the eerie,
right,
creepy feeling, which I love, and then there's the jumpy boo. Mm-hmm. And Nightmare on Elm Street remake was all jumpy boo with subwoofer on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just got really annoying.
Did you see the Jason remake?
No, like I said, I've never been a Friday the 13th guy, so I've never seen all the sequels. I think I've seen 1 and 2 and I've seen Freddy versus Jason, but that's mostly because of Freddy. Yeah. But most of the stuff I liked were and I saw them much later. I didn't see Evil Dead until 2000. And those became some of my favorite movies because there's just that, you know, they have that weird sense of humor running through them, which gets bigger as those go on. But those, they only did three.
Yeah.
And they just remade Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
This past year. And I didn't see that because it looked a little torture porny.
Yeah, I remember on the last podcast you were saying that you were referencing the tongue being cut in half. So yeah, it's a little darker. I mean, and that's to answer your question from a little bit before, I think we sort of let ourselves into the Saw territory because, you know, when you have New Nightmare, which was sort of the precursor to Scream, which was really, if you want to consider it, I guess, a film term, like a postmodern horror because it's referencing itself.
Mm-hmm.
Everything after that, I mean, really, you can go back to the slasher movies that it's referencing, but they're not as serious anymore. So what's next? Well, what, you know, how far can we go? And that's, you know, where those Saws came, where, you know, let's just torture people and gross
make
people
it look
out.
More realistic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because bigger, you know, there comes a lot of diminishing returns where it's so big, you can't wrap your head around it anymore.
Yeah.
The reason why I brought it up is I remember when Jason came out, they were trying to make it more realistic. And they were trying to do things that you wouldn't see before. And I think the sequel to that Jason was going to be one in during the winter, remember?
Yeah, they're still thinking about doing that. Actually, they're taking pitches for it. They wanted to do Jason in the winter, and now they're actually taking pitches for Jason found footage because they just, you know, they want to turn the genre on its head. But
I every now and then I still hear the Freddy versus Jason versus Ash floating around.
Mm-hmm.
Or just recently, which I thought the Evil Dead 2 remake killed it. In fact, I think I said it on the show a couple weeks ago that there would never be any more Bruce Campbell Evil Dead films. And he's mentioning there might be an Army of Darkness.
Yeah, another one. He was talking about being Ash with a cane or something, or with a walker, yeah.
Well, you know, say what you will about Crystal Skull, it's not a good movie, and it's completely George Lucas's fault. Harrison Ford looked great in it.
He did, you know.
And
I was
20 years older than the last film.
Yeah,
Bruce Campbell's much younger than Harrison Ford.
Oh yeah, and I mean, I'll defend Crystal Skull with you because I think, you know, it's not a great movie, but I think there are great moments in it,
and I just love that they made one.
Me too.
There's another one is enough,
right? And I didn't mind that it wasn't up to par, but it was nice being in there for 2 hours watching Indy do his thing. And a lot of it was really, really good. So,
And there's constantly rumors about an Indiana Jones 5, and now that Lucas is out of the picture, it's very possible that Spielberg and Harrison Ford can just make one by themselves for Disney.
I'd rather they do that and have George in like some sort of hotel room and lock him in or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think George has no say because he sold all Lucasfilm and Indiana Jones went with Star Wars.
Yeah, but you don't think that he's not going to like call up Steven at like 1 o'clock in the morning crying? He's like, Steven, what are you doing with Indiana Jones 5? And it's like, shut up, George. And he hangs up. He's going to be like...
He'd be like Gene Roddenberry on the set of Star Trek II Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, it's just
like, it's too military. We have to make it like Star Trek I. Go away. You're the reason this has a third of the budget of the last one.
One of the things I wanted to bring up, you know, to bring it back to Halloween is one of the things that I really loved about Halloween... and what kind of transferred over into horror films after that was, you know, you had John Carpenter who was making this film, and it had a really catchy score, which a lot of horror movies, you know, had the dun 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 dun, dun, dun. And then there you go, Friday the 13th, the So that was kind of fun, and you know, that really added an element to these films. But the other thing too, Texas Chainsaw Massacre had a very gritty, realistic cinematography, and Daniel Pearl did that. He also did the remake. But the thing about Halloween I really loved was,
oh man, we were gonna work with Daniel Pearl, weren't we?
Yeah,
I just remember those emails we would go back and forth.
You guys are too young to have this many washed up stories.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, Dave, as Dave pulls out the Jack Daniels.
Listen here, kid.
It was the cinematography by Dean Cundey using the Steadicam, which we all love Steadicam now, and he did it beautifully in that movie. And just my point I was making was just the way it was shot. I think a lot of films after that, you know, really focused on cinematography, and even if it was low budget, you know, it looked really good.
And you know what's great about Halloween? It's just also like that was probably, well, that was the start of like a strong female lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because what Jamie Lee Curtis' character, like she's the one who defeats Michael.
Yeah, Laurie Strode, yeah.
Yeah, and that I see that leading to Sigourney Weaver's character in Alien.
In Alien, yeah. And then of course Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a film before Halloween where the girl is the one who survives. It's usually like they're all Barbara and Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Just screaming in the corner.
Or like some guy comes in, he's all like, I'm here to save the day.
Yeah.
Like
Mighty Mouse shows up?
Mighty Mouse shows up.
Here I come to save the day.
But like, okay, so so it's easy to say that in the '80s that was a slasher genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had what? Mike Myers, Jason, Freddy Krueger, Hellraiser. Who else are we missing?
I feel like there's more. Well, there's a lot of little weird one-offs. There's stuff like Sleepaway Camp, and Pieces.
Happy Birthday to Me. All these
Happy Birthday
ones.
To Me. Yeah, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day.
Oh,
My Bloody Valentine,
which got all remade.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The Lift?
No,
The
haven't.
Lift is my favorite poster ever. It's like a Swedish horror film. We rented it in college. In college, we would go down to Blockbuster because it was still the days of VHS, and we would try to find the worst movie we could find and then buy 40s of Budweiser. And that would be Saturday night because none of us had girlfriends. And we found this one, The Lift, and the poster is a guy with his head trapped in elevator doors and eerie purple light coming out, and it has the greatest tag for any movie I've ever seen is... Take the stairs, take the stairs. For God's sake, take the stairs.
I just, you know what I loved about the 80s? Because Friday nights were always spent like, you know, either you and your friends or like the family, and it would always be like kids get to pick out a movie and then the adults pick out a movie and it's usually horror. But what I loved was like on those VHS covers, like they always try to come out with like the best cover to get someone to watch the movie.
That was still the days of painted covers.
Yeah.
It was before Photoshop, and it really was before Portraits of the Star. That's what every poster is now.
Right.
But it was like, a great thing.
Those were like the Halloween, not the Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street poster, the cover on that one. It's like, it's awesome.
You know, Steve Klausner, who's a good friend of mine, I got to have him on the show. We wrote a few horror movies together. He had a movie come out called Headspace. His son has a movie called Dead Season, which is on Netflix now. He wrote the tag for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, wow.
Which is
if Nancy doesn't wake up screaming, she won't wake up at all. It's such a great line. He just mentioned it over dinner one night. I was like, "What?
How could you keep that from me?"
Yeah, he also wrote the TV guide ad for Tales of the Gold Monkey.
That's great.
Did what's that? Crypt Keeper?
Mm-hmm.
Did that come out in the '80s?
That's late '80s. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that was always an HBO series.
Yeah.
But that was part of this effort on television to bring back the Twilight Zone in one form or another.
Yeah.
And we had like Spielberg do Amazing Stories,
right,
which was good but very, very expensive. And then there was they brought back the Twilight Zone itself, mm-hmm, in 85, mm-hmm, and Tales from the Dark Side,
yep,
was big. I used to watch that on Saturday nights. They used to show, when I was in high school, they would show Tales from the Dark Side, which were really cheap Twilight Zones, and they'd have like Jerry Stiller or Don Rickles in them. Actually, I think Don Rickles might have been Tales from the Crypt. And then after that, they would show the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And like when you were 15, I would read Batman comics, and that'd be my night.
You're scaring your boobs. Like, that's what the growing boy needs.
That is what it is.
Growing American boy in the 80s, rereading The Dark Knight Returns again.
Yeah, that's what I miss. I miss the horror anthology movies or just TV shows.
Yeah, I think
general.
They never made money. Creepshow, that's
80s. Yeah.
That's a great movie. And that's Romero. That's like one of the only non-zombies.
God, I love The Raft. That's such a good one. Do you remember that one from Creepshow 2, The Raft?
No, I don't remember. The only thing I remember about Creepshow 2 was the framing sequences of Debbie Harry.
Well, yeah.
Like, Debbie Harry going to cook the kid.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you have a chance, I think it's on Netflix right now, but you could just fast forward. It's the second film, I believe. It's called The Raft, and it's awesome. It's like four kids smoking pot going to a little body of water, and they see this raft. They swim to it, and then there's this like creature. I don't know if it's an alien or what, that's coming in the water, sucking them all down, and it's great. So I recommend
that. Cool. My favorite thing in Creepshow is Ted Danson buried up to his neck.
Oh, yeah.
At the beach with the tide coming in.
Oh.
It was great. Cat's Eye was another one. You remember Cat's Eye? Drew, mm-hmm, Barrymore in that? That was another anthology. Most of my memories of these films now that we talk about it. When I was a kid, as I said, I mostly liked sci-fi and comedy, and I wasn't allowed to see rated R movies. So I would sneak in and see like Animal House and Blues Brothers and, mm-hmm, Caddyshack and Stripes, and my parents would let that slide.
Uh-huh.
But then I was too scared to see like Halloween or Cujo or Carrie or Christine, all the Stephen King stuff. But my friends would all see it, and they would just, we would be hanging out on the playground, and they would tell me these stories. So most of my memories are these great stories. My friend Mike O'Shea, who ended up making films in high school and college, he would just he would just always tell me these stories. And they were like campfire stories, but they actually happened. And I'm like, but then what happens to them? To the kid in the car. Like, you know that kid's dead. I'm like, what?
I always felt like when your friends were telling you what happened in a horror movie, it was better than watching a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But like, I don't think that the slasher genre really died in the 80s, despite being like made fun of, like besides itself turning into a joke, because then we got Scream. Yeah, we got I Know What You Did Last Summer and other stuff like that.
But I do feel like the 90s horror wasn't a main... as big a force. I think I Know What You Did Last Summer was definitely trying to do Scream. And I feel like they were all kind of like these wink and these inside looks. And
which one was the one with the hook?
I know what you did last summer.
Which one's the one where like the guy has that mask from that you fence people? Like fencing, you know how they wear a mask?
I don't remember the fencing guy.
You sure it's fencing?
Yeah.
I don't know about that guy.
Ugh, it's gonna kill me.
But I feel like in the '90s the biggest element of horror was the X-Files, which I think was one of the reasons it was a hit, is there wasn't a lot of horror out.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then they did Millennium, which was like pure horror, and people just recoiled from it. That I always said about Millennium, I never finished it. I got to the last season and I couldn't do it anymore. The scariest thing about Millennium was it was all these serial killers like locking you up in your basement and slicing you. And the only guy you could count on to get you out of the situation was Lance Henriksen. And he would always be like, I'm here to save you. Anyway, leave me alone. It's like when Batman pulls you away from the Joker and you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
You're just like, everyone's scary.
I just don't, I never understood. I mean, in Gotham City, when you have people like Joker, Batman, like all those villains out there, it must be really cheap to live in Gotham. Like rent must be like $100.
Oh, yeah.
With utilities included, because they're just like, we're just trying to keep people in here.
Well, I feel like there's no city you can move to, because I feel like Metropolis is really nice.
No,
but
yeah,
it's but like, just as dangerous.
It's like Metropolis may be really nice and pretty, but you know anything that comes in there is going to destroy at least four blocks.
Yeah.
Like, Superman should really, like I always felt in the Superman books, they should fight anywhere else besides Metropolis.
He should always fight in space.
Yeah, because it's just like, oh, who's here? Darkseid decided to bring his army. There goes a third of the city.
That's what I would do with Lex Luthor if I was Superman. The first time he messed with me, right in his face.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you like this? You want me to do this again?
Help me.
And then I would have a conversation. This is the same conversation I have with Ben when he's being bad. I'm like, oh, and he gets sent to his room. I go, well, what'd you do? I was yelling in the house. What did I tell you to do? Don't yell in the house. What did I say would happen if you yelled in the house? I'd have to go to my room. Where are we? In my room. Do you want to be in your room? No. All right, don't do it again. That would be my Superman talking to Lex Luthor. Where are we now, Lex?
We're in space.
He's like, what's going to happen in space, Lex? I'm going to suffocate and freeze. Do you want to come back here? No, I don't. Stop building robots.
Yeah. Do you think that conversation works well with Darkseid, though?
No, because Darkseid doesn't give a shit about space. Darkseid just keeps hitting you with the mega beams.
Yeah. But, man, I do love them slasher movies.
Yeah.
Do you think we could ever get back to that?
What do you think is the real appeal? I mean, Dave, you mentioned it's that there's an over-the-topness, but what do you think is that hooked it? I know from a production standpoint, they were really cheap to make.
Right.
And that's the reason that Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell made Evil Dead. They wanted to make a comedy. And they talked to a producer or a distributor who said, look, if you have a comedy that sucks, you got nothing. You have a horror movie that sucks, you still got blood.
You still got blood. Yeah, that's why they're always guaranteed to make their money back.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to see a...
Yeah, but
it's a date movie. Excuse me, it's a date movie.
Yeah, you get grabbed on the arm.
You do.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the appeal, I think, you know, with...
That's why they made... What was that prom movie we saw?
Prom Night.
Prom Night. That's why they turned that into PG-13 to get all the high schoolers to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
It's High School Musical.
Yeah. And well, with a killer... That was so such a bad movie, but I bet you that movie definitely made its money back.
Yeah, I mean, it's all opening weekend, because I think people don't even care what the movie is. If they know it's a scary movie, they're going to go.
That's a lot of people. They're told what the genre is,
yeah,
and they go. And I think that's why superhero movies do so well, is that they have... There's the core comic book readers, which is like 200,000 people, so it's not a lot. But people like us go. I mean, when Thor comes out, we are going.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's good or bad, we are going. And then there's the other ripple effect of maybe 10 million people that liked that character at some point in their lives. I used to read comics, or I used to watch cartoons, or I had this toy, I'll go. And then the rest of the population is just like, oh, these are the big action movies now, so yeah, let's go.
And one of the things with slashers, too, is part of the of itself is that, you know, you have these characters who have masks or are disfigured, and they're going to kill people. They're really the stars of the movie, not the other characters. I mean, the other characters are always known to be cast with unknowns. I mean, that's why they're so cheap.
Right.
And
they're young.
And they're young.
A lot of, it's Johnny Depp's first movie, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you have young people the same age going to see the movie. You have a character who people would rather see the killer instead of the characters getting killed.
And they're usually focused on teenage problems.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's, they're always like waiting for a test or breaking up with a boyfriend, or
they're always white people, you know. Yeah, you never see like minorities. Well, you always
there's
see
always one.
what about Tales from
they
the Hood?
They get killed right away but because they hang out with a bunch of white people.
Yeah, but it's just like you never see minorities going like, my parents suck, and it's like, I'm going out and partying. It's like, into the creepy woods. They never make those dumb mistakes because, you always see white people.
Because when they do make that, it's Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, aliens are in the block. Let's go kill them. That movie's great.
Well, that's funny, too, because, you know, in the beginning, that whole thing about, you know, the minority dies first, you know, it happened. And then maybe around Scream, a little bit before or after, then the minorities themselves started going, oh, I'm going to die first.
Yeah,
and
it's they like, started making their own jokes about it.
And then it's like,
they're the red shirts of horror movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's where the term like token black guy always came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what it would be. And, you know, they try to integrate diversity into the movie, but, you know, they weren't fooling anyone. I mean, they were going to kill that person first for whatever reason.
That's why, like, remember we were talking about a movie and I'm like, I want the black guy not to die. And it's like, we're going to try really hard to just make this character not die. And he ends
up, he's the one that survives.
But like, yeah, but we always push for like the female lead to like kill the monster. So then it's like, she dies at the end.
Cause she's pretty. So give her the most screen time.
Exactly.
Right. And there is something in that the weakest character is the one that prevails because she's the smartest one and the most resourceful. I mean, that's what got Joss Whedon to write Buffy was this idea of like, she's not the tough Jamie Lee Curtis type or Heather Langenkamp type. She's like the little petite one that looks like a victim. You know, Sarah Michelle Gellar and even Kirstie Swanson, which Joss didn't have a lot to do with the movie.
Yeah.
But they were very like girly, petite-y, you know.
And a lot of people, you know, will argue that slasher movies are very misogynistic. You only care about girls showing their boobs. But in a lot of respects, they aren't, because a lot of those films, the female is the one who's triumphant in the end. I mean, most of the movie might be misogynistic, but the overall message isn't.
So what you're saying is slasher movies should show more penises.
I guess that, well, maybe subconsciously I'm saying this, so I have to see Freud now. So
yeah, give it five more years. We'll get there. 5 years. Just, you know, like, if you see the guys that show their penises, they die.
You know, if you see a penis in a slasher movie, it's coming off.
It's going to come off, yeah.
Oh, actually,
like it's too much of a target. You know how they say you show a bomb in act one, that bomb's got to go off in act three.
Well, Neil and I wrote a scene where a guy gets his penis ripped off.
Yeah.
So...
And that'll be coming. Yeah.
It's coming.
Oh, yeah, no pun intended.
And then it stops coming.
As Allie Healy would like to say, it's penis popping.
Stop coming. Stop coming. For God's sake, stop coming.
I tell you, it's the greatest tag in the world. the lip, by the way, or the other thing I love is that by act two, they run out of ways for an elevator to kill people. first, it drops real fast and kills everybody. Then it's what you want, what you paid to see. The doors close on a guy's head, and it guillotines the guy's head off. Then the elevator cables start reaching down the hall and grabbing people. Then there is a scene where the elevator just gets very, very hot.
Is there like,
and then, wait, by act three, the doors just open, and there's dead people inside.
Here's my question. Where's the building supervisor at this point? It's just like, we gotta put a sign. You know what? Is that lift? That elevator's probably the elevator in the Big Bang Theory, isn't it?
I believe the building supervisor is the first to go, if I remember correctly.
Because the elevators are saying, like, once he goes, the rest is all set to fail.
All hell will break loose.
All hell will break loose. Yeah.
I just saw, have you ever seen Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things?
No, but you were showing,
I showed you the trailer. I went home and watched it. And that was crazy. Like, that's a crazy 70s movie. It's a zombie movie. The zombies don't show up to like the last 10 minutes. But when they do, it's so damn violent. Because it's not gory, but whatever direction these zombie extras were given, they punch through the set. They're like, oh, they're coming. And they just smash doors and they start slapping the people around, but like bouncing them off the wall. It's like Evil Dead, but it's a crowd of people attacking a girl.
Yeah, because the moral of the lesson is children should not. Actually, that movie should be titled. The lesson is young, the title. Pre-adults or older teens should not play with dead things because. What, everyone in there was like in college?
At least. They were like an acting company. Oh. So they all looked like in their 20s.
It wasn't like 7-year-old kids were playing around with dead things. It was like it's like almost full grown.
That should
adults.
Be the title, 7-year-olds shouldn't play with dead things. But I'm no, six. Go ahead.
Have fun, boy. Have fun. Learn the anatomy.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. So this week we're going to pick our favorite 80s horror movie. I hit a lot of mine. I probably would have said Evil Dead before or The Lift. But I just saw last weekend for the first time Reanimator.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, I had never seen it before. And that was one of those movies where my friends would tell me about it. I must have been in seventh grade when it came out. And it just them telling me about it freaked me out so much that I wouldn't go near it. And then
is that the movie where like someone dies and science brings them back?
Yeah, and it's the thing that finally got me to watch it was I had it on my Netflix for a year, and then I'm like, it's Halloween, I want to watch a horror movie every day. The fact that Reanimator is played by Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, it's so good.
And yeah. Jeffrey Combs has this oily voice where he was on Deep Space Nine for a long time. He played like 3 different roles on Deep Space Nine because they loved him so much. And he was also the Question on Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, where they're torturing him, and they're like, tell us what we want to know. The little ends on shoelaces are called aglets. Their purpose is sinister. But he's so calm and cool in it. It's like, it fits nicely on that shelf of Evil Dead and Return of the Living Dead, which I talked about on the Zombie Cast.
How many sequels did they do of Reanimator?
I think 3. There's a Bride of Reanimator, and then is it like Return of Reanimator?
I've only
seen the first.
Is there a Reanimator where like the guy's girlfriend dies and they bring her back? And then, like, he finds out that the military is bringing back people from the dead to use them as, like, soldiers in the war.
I'm going to say yes, but I haven't seen the sequels. That sounds like what the second one
that
made.
Is. I saw that one.
The first one is so crazy because, like, all I knew about it was that, like, he's bringing people back from the dead, but sometimes he's bringing pieces.
Yeah.
So, like, he just brings a hand back, and I'm like, that sounds horrible. He's like, brings a guy, like, in half. But when I watch it, the hilarious thing about it is Jeffrey Combs is just this cool deadpan through the whole thing. But when people come back from the dead, they just come back totally insane. So they accidentally kill the girlfriend's father, and he's like, but we can bring him back. And when they bring him back, he just bangs his head on the wall. He's just like, until they give him a lobotomy. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I get it now. It's not just supposed to be good. This is supposed to be crazy. And that's a perfect example, Dave, of what you were saying. It's so over the top that as disgusting as it is, you don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I just remember from that movie, the severed head that he reanimates, for some reason, always made me think of John Kerry. It kind of looks like John Kerry.
That actor did look like John Kerry.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And the body picks it up and just walks around with it for like half the movie, and it just shows it to people when he wants to see people.
Show and tell, man. Show and tell.
And then they get the girl naked because it's the 80s.
Yeah,
and he starts eating her out with the head.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's like holding it, and she's screaming the whole time, and it's this moment where it's like, all right, she's going to get saved. She does not get saved for a long time.
The reason why I bring up the third one is the third one, this kid, his dad works in the military and is bringing people back from the dead, and he it's like his first girlfriend. He loses his virginity to his girlfriend. The dad comes in and goes like, what are you doing sleeping with that hussy? So he hops.
he used the word hussy, didn't he?
He hops on his motorcycle with his girlfriend, and they're riding, and he has an accident. She flies off the motorcycle, breaks her neck like on a tree and stuff, and he's like, no, the only girl that would sleep with me, and brings her to the military spot where they bring her back. And it's like, oh, I got my girlfriend back. But she starts eating people. Like, she's like, I don't want regular food. I want human flesh. And he's trying to, like, find a cure for it. So he has to go back to the military site. And that's when you find out they're bringing other people back, using them as soldiers and stuff. But, like, I just love that concept. It's just like,
it's like the first Peter Jackson movie, Bad Brains, where he brings the mother back and the mother starts eating people.
Yeah, but I just love it. It's just like, I have to bring this girlfriend back because she's the only one that would sleep with me. And, like, It was just great.
Your military thing reminds me of something we didn't even talk about, which is Child's Play, the third one where that military score.
Oh, yeah, never mentioned Chucky.
I love Chucky. He's so good.
Aren't they bringing that one back, too?
Well, they just did a straight-to-video remake. Yeah, and what really pissed me off about it was they have the doll, which is still voiced by Brad Dourif, which I'm happy about. But when he's alive, he's Blade. CG. So,
wait, what?
Yeah, CG it's really an, doll. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, we've seen it, like, great animatronics done in, like, Bride of Chucky and, unfortunately, the Seed of Chucky.
It's the whole tween culture now. They're not satisfied with anything, I think, and they wanted to do it faster, cheaper, you know, harder, better, faster, stronger.
It's CG, too. It's just the default. It's not a horror movie at all, but one of the things I hated about Wolverine Origins, and there's a lot to hate, was they went with CG claws, and I'm like, you've made three movies with real claws, and they had no weight to them. He was just kind of waving his hands around.
They looked so fake.
And the crazy thing was, like, it's literally the fourth movie with Wolverine, and the claws looked horrible. It's amazing. Well, Neil, what was your pick?
You know, there's so many that I love, and I have way too many obscure ones and favorite ones, but I'm just going to pick one based solely on the fact that it's very obscure. Hopefully not everyone has seen it. If you get a chance, though, check it out. I actually think they just released it on Blu-ray, which is really weird to me because I thought it was only like in VHS and stuff, but it's a film called Street Trash. So if you have a chance, check that out. It's about a new type of liquor called Viper that comes out on the streets, and homeless people start drinking it, and it melts them. And there's a great scene where a homeless man gets melted into a toilet, and you see his face still talking in the toilet. There is a severed member that flies through the air in slow motion and hits someone. But it's really bad, but it's so bad that it's good. So I recommend getting some friends, some popcorn, drinks, you know, alcohol if you like it, or soda or whatever, and just watch it and laugh because it's 80s. Filmmaking at its
best. I have
never
heard of it, and I feel like that's the movie that should be remade in CG. Melting homeless people.
It's so good. It's so bad, but it's so good. So I really recommend that one. I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
The first movie I was going to say was Garbage Pail Kids, but I couldn't watch it. I was just so disgusted with it.
Oh, it's so good.
And Neil talks about how great it is. Till this day, I don't think I finished watching it.
I have never finished
will
it.
I ever watch it.
You don't like when the little Garbage Pail Kid takes his nose and his snot, like, dripping?
I hated the cards. The cards, just like, when the cards came out, I was just like, this is destroying everything that's positive in the world. Like, some this kid with armpit hair, he's like trying to get flowers to a girl, and, like, the flowers come from his armpits, and I was just like, what is this? Go away.
My mom used to give me those cards all the time. I'd be so happy after school.
And great. I love a movie where you do say, what is this? Not in a way, it's a different level than, like, what's going on in this movie? Who are these people? What do they want? It's, what is this thing in front of my face?
And they just start reading this. I see the cards coming out more and more, and I told Danny, we were at Target, and he was like looking at, you know, his Pokemon cards, Yu-Gi-Oh, whatever. And he looked at the Garbage Pail Kids, and I took him, and I said, you could do a lot of things in this world, Danny. You could, like, be a shoplifter, accidentally kill someone, create, you know, like, rob a bank. But if you buy a pack of these Garbage Pail Kids, I will, you're dead to me. But the movie I pick is Kids Under the Stairs.
People Under the Stairs.
Yeah. And I think one of my favorite things is you clearly saw the costumes and, like, the masks of all the bad guys in it, because, like, you could see, I remember distinctly seeing the back of a mask, like the zipper coming out of the guy's shirt.
There was a movie on Mystery Science Theater called Pod People has, like, the clearest zippers I've ever seen. Like, they didn't even have to point them out. Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, but that movie is just like, and plus it had Jesse from the Mighty Ducks in it. I think that might have been, like, his first movie before.
Well, I was going to say, subconsciously, you were talking about a movie where a minority was the lead, and he was the lead.
And he saved the day.
A young black kid, yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go. That's
kudos to Wes Craven.
Yep.
Well, this has been so much fun. Thanks, guys, for recommending it. This concludes Monster Month. So have a great Halloween. Dress up. I never dress up as a monster. I always dress up as, like, I always dress up as a role model. I'm always Batman or Indiana Jones or
dad.
Homer Simpson or Reed Richards. Or I was Mulder one year, Renee went as Scully.
You know what's hard about, like, when you dress up for Halloween and you want to be like some, like, you want to wear a big, like, monster-like mask? You can't drink anything.
And you're hot and you're sweaty.
Yeah, and it just, you smell like rubber.
If I can give everyone listening to this one word of advice before Halloween, whatever costume you pick, do not pick a costume where you have to hold something the entire time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't be Thor. You know, because eventually you're just going to hate that hammer, but then you're going to put it down and people are going to go, hey, where's your hammer, Thor? And you're going to be like, oh, God damn it.
Then you're going to hear the same joke all night. I can't pick up Mjolnir.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking you were going to say, like, hey, Thor, is it hammer time?
That is also my recommendation. Everyone should dress up as MC Hammer.
I was going to say MC Hammer Thor. That'd be a great costume.
Ooh, I like that. Or you just hold a Hammer Man doll.
Yeah.
It's the Hammer of Thor.
Thor and MC Hammer, yeah.
As always, you can reach us at Not On My Book. That is the Twitter feed. Find us on Caffeinated Comics. David is now part of the Caffeinated Comics Facebook team.
I did.
And posted this week the Captain America trailer and the X-Men trailer. So if you want to see them. We got them on Facebook. And Dave, how else can we reach you?
By magic. I have no idea. I give up on technology. I used to be so tech slobby. I used to be able to turn like...
You are tech slobby.
I used to be like, Mom, you turn Winamps into MP3s and you burn them on a CD. And now I'm just like, what does this button do?
That's your problem. You're still going, where's the Winamp?
I just found out that I do not need an app on my iPhone to have flashlight. I was just like, wait, if I just swipe up, the flashlight button comes on? I was like, what a waste of time.
And then you chase the little kids off your lawn. And
I got the flashlight up.
You don't need it. I'll show you.
Is that an OS 7 thing?
Yeah.
Ooh. They announced the new iPads, too. I think I'm going to have to get a mini.
Not the iPad Air?
No, you know what? You only lose an inch of screen by going with a mini, and it's easier to carry. You can hold it in one hand. It's $100 less, but it has all the same specs as here. It has a Retina screen.
Yeah.
I just like it because for making movies, you could do a lot of things with it.
Oh, yeah. That's
a lot of apps. You could use it as one of those things that go clap.
Clapper, yeah.
Yeah, and iMovie and GarageBand are now free on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And Neil, how can we reach you?
You can reach me on Instagram. My name is Rough Cut Neil. It's R-O-U-G-H-C-U-T-N-E-A-L. And on Twitter, my name is at Fishface, F-I-S-C-H. F-A-C-E. And ask me to talk about movies. It's my favorite thing to talk about. So if there's any obscure horror movies you'd like to watch and you need some recommendations, just tell me what you want to see and I'll give you one.
Yeah, Neil could tell you like the really messed up Asian horror movies before they were cool.
Oh,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I could do a whole podcast on just Asian horror. So don't get me started on that.
They just seem nuts. That was one of the things I loved about Cabin in the Woods was when they show the other countries and Japan clearly was a Japanese horror movie. The little girls like singing and a girl floating around.
That was, I love that movie.
Well, happy Halloween, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Happy Halloween.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!